but you need to be sly about it. As you probably know, in reverse psychology, you basically ask for the opposite of what you want. When you want a kiss from a naturally oppositional 2-year-old, say, "I don't want a kiss." The next moment, the child is begging to give you a kiss. When you want someone to help you with a chore, say, "You probably wouldn't want to help me with this chore." Family therapists have developed whole paradoxical treatment prescriptions to deal with resistant couples. The therapists bet on the couple's resistance to suggestions. For example, if the couple is having problems spending time together and finding time for sex, the therapist would tell them not to spend any time together and definitely not to have sex. Many couples find that after the paradoxical suggestions, they start to spend more time together and make love more regularly and passionately than they have in years. Paradoxical suggestions and interventions have been used as therapeutic prescriptions by psychotherapists for many years. These interventions have gone under many names, such as anti-suggestion, negative practice, paradoxical intention, confusion technique, declaring hopelessness, restraining change, prescribing a relapse, and therapeutic double blind. Basically, they all involve suggesting the opposite of the desired response. A common paradoxical suggestion is given to people who have trouble sleeping. Stay awake as long as possible when going to bed. In treating male patients who could not urinate in public restrooms because of anxiety, psychologist L.M. Asher told them they should go to public restrooms and go through the entire procedure of urinating, stand in front of the urinal, unzip their pants, and take out their penis, but refrain from urinating. With repeated trials, the men were able to overcome their fear of urinating in public. It is my contention that these tactics probably work best on ACG clients. Whenever you want a singular person to do something for you, it is best to make it look as if it is his or her idea. If you ask for many things directly, you are likely to be disappointed. Ask for the person's input. Get his or her feedback. Here are some examples. If you want someone to meet you for dinner, it is often best to ask what time is good for him or her, as opposed to telling him or her to meet you at a certain time. If you want a hug, it is often best to say something like, "You probably wouldn't want to give me a hug." If you want him or her to go to the store with you, say something like, "You probably wouldn't want to go with me." If you want someone to finish a report by next Thursday, say, "You probably can't finish the report by next Thursday." If you want a child to comply with a request without giving you a problem, say, "You probably wouldn't be able to do this without getting upset, would you?" Social. Dealing with oppositional children. There are two prescriptions I find essential in dealing with oppositional children. Remember, oppositional children often become rigid or stuck in negative behavior patterns. Effectively intervening with them can make a significant difference in their lives. The first prescription is to know when to distract their attention in order to break the loops of thoughts or behaviors that cause them to be oppositional. Distraction, as previously mentioned, is a very powerful technique in helping ACG thinkers get unstuck. Distract the child away from the pattern by changing the subject, getting him or her to do something physical, such as taking a walk or playing a game, or working with a predetermined distraction prescription. Josh. One prescription I use is having the parent read from a favorite book when the child begins to get stuck or locked into a negative thought or behavior. For example, 8-year-old Josh got stuck on being afraid of going to school. Before school, he would complain of headaches, stomach aches, and anything else he thought his mother would accept to keep him home. When she caught on to his ploy, she would try to make him go to school anyway. When that happened, the little boy would scream, cry, throw temper tantrums, and threaten to run away from home. As the problem escalated, she brought Josh to see me. Not only was he anxious about school, his behavior was typically oppositional. The first intervention was to tell Josh, in no uncertain terms, that he was going to school. It was the law. It was good for him. And if we allowed him to stay home from school, he would become more afraid of it and would actually become frozen by his fears. To help him on the mornings when he felt as if he couldn't go to school or he was worried about school, his mom or dad would distract him from his bad thoughts. Josh was very interested in insects and had many beloved books on the topic. When Josh became upset, his parents would read to him about a new insect and try to make it as interesting as possible. If Josh still gave his parents a problem about going to school, then he had to spend the day sitting on his bed without watching television or being able to go out to play. If he was too sick to go to school, then he was too sick to do anything else. Before this intervention, Josh had problems on 8 mornings out of 10. After the first month, Josh's problems in the morning diminished to 2 mornings out of 10. By the third month, the problem was eliminated. Both parts of the intervention were crucial to its success. His parents had to let Josh know clearly that his fearful, oppositional behavior would not get him anything positive. The parents would not be bullied. He was going to school, or he would have to sit on his bed all day long, no secondary gain by being sick. Second, the parents used distraction to help Josh shift his attention away from the fears that got him stuck. It is essential that parents lovingly assert their ultimate authority over ACG children. Parents cannot allow oppositional behavior to prevail. If they do, it only reinforces the oppositional behavior, which could ruin a child's life. Permissive parents don't teach their children to deal with authority, and those kids have trouble socially and in school. Authoritative, firm parents tend to raise the most effective children. Just as when people who have OCD give in to their obsessive thoughts or compulsive behaviors, those behaviors become stronger and harder to fight. When you give in to oppositional children and allow them to oppose you and disobey, their oppositional behavior only becomes worse. The earlier you train oppositional children out of this behavior, the better off everyone will be. To that end, I have developed a set of parenting rules that are the first step in dealing with these children. It is important to clearly spell out the rules and make sure the child knows you are going to stick to them. Here are 2 of the rules that deal with oppositional behavior. Do what mom and dad say the first time. No arguing with parents. These rules spell out that you have authority as parents and will not allow your child to argue with you. If you make it a rule for children to comply the first time, then they know that is what is expected of them. You must also quickly intervene if they do not comply the first time. Do not tell a child to do something 8 times. Your chance of abusing the child, verbally or physically, goes up dramatically if you do. For example, if you tell a child to do something and he or she refuses to do it or doesn't do it within a reasonable period of time, very quickly and calmly say, "You have a choice. You can do it now or you can take a time out and then you can do it. I don't care. It's up to you." If the child doesn't move quickly to do what you asked, then put him or her in timeout. Repeat as necessary. Deal with misbehavior quickly, firmly, and unemotionally. The more emotional you get, the more these kids tend to misbehave. Consistency is essential here. The second rule, no arguing with parents, is very important for oppositional children. If you allow the child to argue with you, then you are only reinforcing and strengthening his or her ACG resistance. Of course, you want to hear your child's opinion, but draw the line between stating one's opinion and arguing. You might want to tell your child, as your parents, we want to hear your opinion, but arguing means you have made your point more than two times. These parenting interventions are always more effective when you do them in the context of a good relationship with your child. Parents who become limbically bonded to their children by spending time and listening to them have fewer problems with oppositional behavior. In summary, use distraction when necessary, but also be firm and authoritative with oppositional children. Pick your battles and do not fight over every issue. Unfortunately, oppositional children often have one or two cingulate parents, which only feeds the negative family dynamic. Flexibility on the parent's part is often very helpful. Spiritual ACG prescriptions. Spiritual, positive rituals. One of the most interesting trends related to our imaging work is that it seems people tend to choose their religious affiliations based in part on brain function. This is a personal area of interest for me. As I mentioned, I grew up Roman Catholic and have maintained my connection to my faith. I was an altar boy for many years and went to a Christian university, Vanguard University in Southern California, and to a Christian medical school, Oral Roberts University. I have given lectures on the connection between mental health and spirituality. After I started our imaging work, I noticed that people who had low PFC activity tended to choose religious services that were more exciting and unpredictable, such as a Pentecostal healing service. They needed stimulation in order to focus, while people who had high ACG activity tended to choose religious practices that had more predictability and ritual. Of course, we often choose the religious faith in which we were raised. But when people go outside of their family tradition, the brain plays a role in their selection process. People who have high ACG activity find comfort in sameness and predictability. If that is true for you, find practices that are both positive and potentially healing, such as prayer and meditation. Putting ACG prescriptions together. A doctor once approached me at a seminar and said, "Dr. Amon, I am so grateful for everything you have taught me, especially about the anterior cingulate gyrus. I'm married to a woman who has the ACG from hell. No matter what I say, she says the opposite. It has been so frustrating. For years, I just thought that she didn't love me. Now I know it has to do with how her brain works. If I ask her to go to the store with me, she would always say, 'I'm too busy to go. It is so insensitive of you to ask me. Don't you see everything I'm doing?' Feeling bad, I stopped asking her to do things. Since I've listened to you about the ACG, I realize that her brain gets stuck and I need to ask for the opposite of what I really want. For example, if I want her to go to the store with me, I'll say, 'I'm going to the store. You probably don't want to go with me.' Incensed, she says, 'Of course I want to go with you. What would ever give you that idea?' We are doing so much better now because of your work, but I still have one problem. It's the sex thing. It doesn't sound right to say, I'm going to have sex. You probably don't want to come with me. Do you have any ideas for me? I love this question. Brain science can be so practical. I have several ideas, I said. First, take her for a long walk. Exercise boosts blood flow to the brain and also increases serotonin levels as well. It works like natural Prozac. Next, when you get home together, give her a small piece of dark chocolate to boost a chemical in her brain called phenylethylamine, which increases the brain's alerting response that something fun is about to happen. Then, go in the bathroom and put a little baby powder behind your ears. The scent of baby powder is a natural aphrodisiac for women. Rub her shoulders and never ask for anything directly. Odds are, you will be more likely to get lucky. Several weeks later, I received an email from this doctor with a string of thank yous. Knowing about the brain can help bring more love into your life. Chapter 14. Looking into memory, temper, and mysticism. The temporal lobes. 94-year-old father to his 68-year-old son. One day you wake up and realize that you're not 81 anymore. You begin to count the minutes, not the days, and you realize that you're not going to be around. All you have left is the experiences. That's all there is. From the movie, Grumpy Old Men. Functions of the temporal lobes. Dominant side, usually the left. Understanding and processing language. Intermediate-term memory. Long-term memory. Auditory learning. Retrieval of words. Complex memories. Visual and auditory processing. Emotional stability. Non-dominant side. Usually the right. Recognizing facial expressions. Decoding vocal intonation. Rhythm. Music. Visual learning, spiritual experience. The most precious treasures we have in life are the images we store in the memory banks of our brains. The sum of these stored experiences is responsible for our sense of personal identity and our sense of connectedness to those around us. Our experiences are enormously significant in making us who we are. The temporal lobes, on either side of the brain, behind the eyes and underneath the temples, store the memories and images and help us define our sense of ourselves. On the dominant side of the brain, the left side for most people, the temporal lobes are intimately involved with understanding and processing language, intermediate and long-term memory, complex memories, the retrieval of language or words, emotional stability, and visual and auditory processing. Language is one of the keys to being human. It allows us to communicate with other human beings and to leave a legacy of our thoughts and actions for future generations. Receptive language, being able to receive and understand speech and written words, requires temporal lobe stability. The ability to accurately hear your child say, I love you, or to listen and be frightened by a scary story, is housed in this part of the brain. The dominant temporal lobe helps to process sounds and written words into meaningful information. Being able to read in an efficient manner, remember what you read, and integrate the new information relies heavily on the dominant temporal lobe. Problems here contribute to language struggles, miscommunication, and reading disabilities. I often tell my patients that it is their memories that give them both their greatest joys and their greatest sorrows. Memories can make us strong and self-confident, remember the times you felt most competent, or they can bring us to our knees. Remember your biggest mistakes. Memories influence every action and pattern of action you undertake. Essential components of memory are integrated and stored in the temporal lobes. When this part of the brain is damaged or dysfunctional, memory is often impaired. Memories can sabotage our chances for success and effectiveness. I once treated a couple with severe marital problems. The husband had problems with depression and attention deficit disorder. His wife tended to be rigid and unforgiving. Shortly after they began therapy, the husband's problems were diagnosed and treated with medication. He got significant relief from his symptoms. Everyone, except his wife, noticed the improvement. Because his more positive behavior was inconsistent with her experience, she could not see his progress and remained in old patterns of behavior. She was stuck on blaming him. She was unwilling to get help for herself, and eventually the marriage died. It was her memories, rather than the new reality, that killed it. Through our research, we have also found that emotional stability is heavily influenced by the dominant temporal lobe. The ability to consistently feel stable and positive, despite the ups and downs of everyday life, is important for the development and maintenance of consistent character and personality. Optimum activity in the temporal lobes enhances mood stability, while increased or decreased activity in this part of the brain leads to fluctuating, inconsistent, or unpredictable moods and behaviors. The non-dominant temporal lobe, usually the right, is involved with reading facial expressions, processing verbal tones and intonations from others, hearing rhythms, appreciating music, visual learning, and spiritual experiences. Recognizing familiar faces and facial expressions and being able to accurately perceive voice tones and intonations and give them appropriate meaning are critical social skills. Being able to tell when someone is happy to see you, scared of you, bored, or in a hurry is essential for effectively interacting with others. In 1867, Antonio Quaglino, an Italian ophthalmologist, reported on a patient who, after a stroke, was unable to recognize familiar faces despite being able to read very small type. Since the 1940s, more than 100 cases of prosopagnosia, the inability to recognize familiar faces, have been reported in the medical literature. Patients who have this disorder are often unaware of it. Right hemisphere problems are often associated with neglect or denial of illnesses, or they may be ashamed at being unable to recognize close family members or friends. Most commonly, these problems have been associated with deficits of the right temporal and parietal lobes. Results of current research suggest that knowledge of emotional facial expressions is inborn, not learned. Infants can recognize their mother's emotional faces. Yet, when there are problems in this part of the brain, social skills can be impaired. The temporal lobes help us process the world of sight and sound and give us the language of life. This part of the brain allows us to be stimulated, relaxed, or brought to ecstasy by the experience of great music. The temporal lobes have been called the interpretive cortex as they interpret what we hear and integrate it with stored memories to give meaning to the incoming information. Strong feelings of conviction, great insight, and knowing the truth have also been attributed to the temporal lobes. Problems with the dominant, usually left temporal lobe. Aggression, internally or externally directed. Dark or violent thoughts. Sensitivity to slights, mild paranoia, word-finding problems, auditory processing problems, reading difficulties, emotional instability. Problems with the non-dominant, usually right temporal lobe. Difficulty recognizing facial expression, difficulty decoding vocal intonation, implicated in social skills struggles. Problems with either or both temporal lobes. Memory problems, amnesia, headaches or abdominal pain without a clear explanation, anxiety or fear for no particular reason, abnormal sensory perceptions, visual or auditory distortions, feelings of déjà vu or jamais vu, periods of spaciness or confusion, religious or moral preoccupation, hypergraphia, excessive writing, seizures. Temporal lobe abnormalities occur much more frequently than previously recognized. You'll note that many of these symptoms are often thought of as psychological, when in reality, for many, they are biological. The temporal lobes sit in a vulnerable area of the skull, in the temporal fossa or cavity, behind the eye sockets and underneath the temples. The front wall of the cavity includes a sharp bony ridge, the lesser wing of the sphenoid bone, which frequently damages the front part of the temporal lobes in even minor head injuries. God would have done better to put bumper guards on that ridge. Since the temporal lobes sit in a cavity surrounded by bone on five sides, front, back, right side, left side, and underside, they can be damaged by a blow to the head from almost any angle. Temporal lobe problems can come from many different sources, the most common being genetics, head injuries, and toxic or infectious exposure. The temporal lobes, prefrontal cortex, and anterior cingulate gyrus are the parts of the brain most vulnerable to damage by virtue of their placement within the skull. They are also the most heavily involved in thinking and behavior. Blaine, age 60, came to see me because his wife heard me speak at a national conference, and she was sure he had a temporal lobe problem. He had memory lapses, he was moody, and he was often aggressive. He also frequently saw shadows out of the corner of his eyes and heard an annoying buzzing sound, for which his doctor could not find a cause. His temper flare-ups just seemed to come out of the blue. The littlest thing set me off. Then I feel terribly guilty, he said. When Blaine was 5 years old, he had fallen off a porch, head first into a pile of bricks. As a schoolboy, he had had a terrible time learning to read and had frequently gotten into fights. His brain spec studies showed significantly low activity in his PFC and left temporal lobe. Seeing these abnormalities, it was clear to me that many of Blaine's problems came from these areas, likely a result of his childhood accident. Blaine's Four Circles plan included biological, an anti-seizure medication, valproate, Depakote, known to stabilize temporal lobe activity, and then a stimulant to enhance PFC activity. Psychological, ant therapy, especially working with the ants that give guilt beatings. Social, working with his wife to enlist her support. Spiritual, a discussion about meaning and purpose. When I spoke to him 3 weeks after starting his plan, he was elated. The buzzing and shadows had gone away, and he had not lost his temper since he had started the treatment. He said, "That was the first time in my life I can remember going 3 weeks and not screaming at someone." 4 years later, his temper remains under control. Common problems associated with left temporal lobe abnormalities include aggression, internally or externally directed, dark or violent thoughts, sensitivity to slights, mild paranoia, word-finding problems, auditory processing problems, reading difficulties, and emotional instability. Let's look at each of these in detail. The aggressiveness often seen with left temporal lobe abnormalities can be expressed either externally toward others or internally in aggressive thoughts about oneself. Aggressive behavior is complex, but in a large study performed in my clinic on people who had assaulted another person or damaged property, more than 70% had left temporal lobe abnormalities. It seems that temporal lobe damage or dysfunction makes a person more prone to irritable, angry, or violent thoughts. One patient of mine with temporal lobe dysfunction probably inherited, as his father was a rageaholic, complains of frequent, intense, violent thoughts. He feels shame over having these thoughts. "I can be walking down the street," he told me, "and someone accidentally brushes against me, and I get the thought of wanting to shoot him or club him to death. These thoughts frighten me." Thankfully, even though his SPECT study confirmed left temporal lobe dysfunction, he had good prefrontal cortex function, so he is able to supervise his behavior and maintain impulse control over his terrible thoughts. In a similar case, Misty, a 45-year-old woman, came to see me about her angry outburst. One day, someone had accidentally bumped into her in the grocery store, and she had started screaming at the woman. "I just don't understand where my anger comes from," she said. "I've had 16 years of therapy, and it is still there. Out of the blue, I'll go off. I get the most horrid thoughts. You'd hate me if you knew." She had fallen off the top of a bunk bed when she was 4 years old and had been unconscious for only a minute or two. The front and back parts of her left temporal lobe were clearly damaged. A small daily dose of an anti-seizure medication, together with other four-circle strategies, was very helpful in calming the monster within. I often see internal aggressiveness with left temporal lobe abnormalities expressed in suicidal behavior. In a study from our clinic, we saw left temporal lobe abnormalities in 62% of our patients who had serious suicidal thoughts or actions. After I gave a lecture about the brain in Oakland, California, a woman came up to me in tears. "Oh, Dr. Amon," she said, "I know my whole family has temporal lobe problems. My paternal great-grandfather killed himself. My father's mother and father killed themselves. My father and two of my three uncles killed themselves. And last year, my son tried to kill himself. Is there help for us?" I had the opportunity to evaluate and scan three members of her family. Two had left temporal lobe abnormalities. Anticonvulsants to stabilize this area of the brain were helpful in their treatment. In terms of suicidal behavior, one very sad case highlights the involvement of the left temporal lobes. For years, I wrote a column in my local newspaper about the brain and behavior. One column was about temporal lobe dysfunction and suicidal behavior. A week or so after it appeared, a woman came to see me. She told me that her 20-year-old daughter had killed herself several months earlier, and she was grief-stricken over the unbelievable turn of events in her life. She was the most ideal child a mother could have, she said. She did great in school. She was polite, cooperative, and a joy to have around. Then it all changed. 2 years ago, she had a bicycle accident. She accidentally hit a branch in the street and was flipped over the handlebars, landing on the left side of her face. She was unconscious when an onlooker got to her, but shortly thereafter she came to. Nothing was the same after that. She was moody, angry, easily set off. She started to complain of bad thoughts in her head. I took her to see a therapist, but it didn't seem to help. One evening, I heard a loud noise out front. She had shot and killed herself on our front lawn. Her tears made me cry. I knew that her daughter might well have been helped if someone had recognized her minor head injury, which had likely caused temporal lobe damage. Proper treatment may have prevented her suicide. Of interest, in the past 30 years, psychiatrists have been using anticonvulsants to treat many psychiatric problems. My suspicion is that we are frequently treating underlying physiological brain problems that we label as psychiatric. People with left temporal lobe abnormalities are often more sensitive to slights and even appear mildly paranoid. This sensitivity can cause serious relational and work problems. Reading and language processing problems are also common when there is dysfunction in the left temporal lobe. Being able to read in an efficient manner, remember what you read, and integrate the new information relies heavily on the dominant temporal lobe. It is currently estimated that nearly 20% of the U.S. population has difficulty reading. Our spec studies of people with dyslexia, a reading disorder, often show underactivity in the back half of the left temporal lobe. Dyslexia can be inherited, or it can be brought about after a head injury damaging this part of the brain. Here are two illustrative cases. Denise. 13-year-old Denise came to see me because she was having problems with her temper. She had pulled a knife on her mother. This had precipitated the referral. She also had school problems, especially in the area of reading, and was in special classes. Due to the seriousness of her aggression and learning problems, I decided to order a spec study at rest and during concentration. At rest, her brain showed mild decreased activity in the back half of her left temporal lobe. When she tried to concentrate, the activity in her left temporal lobe completely shut down. As I showed Denise and her mother the scans, I told Denise that it was clear that the more she tried to read, the harder reading would become. As I said this, Denise burst into tears. She cried, "When I read, I am so mean to myself. I tell myself, try harder. If you try harder, then you won't be so stupid." But trying harder doesn't seem to help. I told her it was essential for her to talk nicely to herself and that she would do better reading in an interesting, fun, and relaxed setting. I sent Denise to see the educational therapist who works in my office. She taught her a specialized reading program that showed her how to visualize words and use a different part of the brain to process reading. Carrie. K Perry, a 40-year-old psychologist, came to see me 2 years after she sustained a head injury in a car accident. Before the accident, she had had a remarkable memory and had been a fast, efficient reader. She said reading had been one of her academic strengths. After the accident, she had memory problems, struggled with irritability, and reading became difficult. She said that she had to read passages over and over to retain any information, and that she had trouble remembering what she read for more than a few moments. Again, her spec study showed damage to the front and back of her left temporal lobe, the pattern typically seen in trauma. I had her see my biofeedback technician to enhance activity in her left temporal lobe. Over the course of 4 months, she was able to regain her reading skills and improve her memory and control over her temper. In our experience, left temporal lobe abnormalities are more frequently associated with externally directed discomfort, such as anger, irritability, and aggressiveness, while right temporal lobe abnormalities are more often associated with internal discomfort, anxiety, and fearfulness. The left-right dichotomy has been particularly striking in our clinical population. One possible explanation is that the left hemisphere of the brain is involved with understanding and expressing language, and perhaps when the left hemisphere is dysfunctional, people express their discomfort inappropriately. When the non-dominant hemisphere is involved, the discomfort is more likely to be expressed non-verbally. Mike. Non-dominant, usually right, temporal lobe problems more often involve difficulty with social skills, especially in the area of recognizing facial expressions and voice intonations. Mike, age 30, illustrates the difficulties we have seen when there is dysfunction in this part of the brain. Mike came to see me because he wanted a date. He had never had a date in his life and was very frustrated by his inability to successfully ask a woman out. During the evaluation, Mike said he was at a loss as to what his problem was. His mother, who accompanied him to the session, had her own ideas. Mike, she said, misreads situations. He's always done that. Sometimes he comes on too strong, and sometimes he is withdrawn when another person is interested. He doesn't read the sound of my voice right either. I can be really mad at him, and he doesn't take me seriously. Or he can think I'm mad when I'm nowhere near mad. When he was a little boy, Mike tried to play with other children, but he could never hold on to friends. It was so painful to see him get discouraged. Mike's spec study showed marked decreased activity in his right temporal lobe. His left temporal lobe was fine. The intervention that was most effective for Mike was intensive social skills training. He worked with a psychologist who coached him on facial expressions, voice tones, and proper social etiquette. He had his first date 6 months after coming to the clinic. Abnormal activity in either or both temporal lobes can cause a wide variety of other symptoms, including abnormal perceptions, sensory illusions, memory problems, feelings of déjà vu, that you have previously experienced something, even though you haven't. Jamais vu, not recognizing familiar places or people. Periods of panic or fear for no particular reason. Periods of spaciness or confusion. And preoccupation with religious or moral issues. Illusions are very common temporal lobe symptoms. Common illusions include seeing shadows or bugs out of the corner of the eyes, seeing objects change size or shape. One patient would see lampposts turn into animals and run away. Another would see figures in a painting move, hearing bees buzzing or static from a radio not there, smelling odors or getting odd tastes in the mouth, feeling bugs crawling on the skin or other skin sensations. Unexplained headaches and stomach aches are also common in temporal lobe dysfunction. Several anticonvulsants, including valproate, Depakote, and topiramate, Topamax, are clinically indicated for migraine headaches. Often when headaches or stomach aches are due to temporal lobe problems, anticonvulsants seem to be helpful. Many of the patients who experience sudden feelings of anxiety, nervousness, or panic make secondary associations to the panic and develop fears or phobias. For example, if you are in a park, the first time you experience a feeling of panic or dread, you may then develop anxiety every time you go into a park. Moral or religious preoccupation is a common symptom with temporal lobe dysfunction. I have a little boy in my practice who, at age 6, made himself physically sick by worrying about all the people who are going to hell. Another patient spent 7 days a week in church, praying for the souls of his family. He came to see me because of his temper problems, frequently directed at his family, which were often seen in response to some perceived moral misgiving or outrage. Another patient came to see me because he spent so many hours focused on the mysteries of life that he could not get any work done and was about to lose his job. Hypergraphia, a tendency toward compulsive and extensive writing, has also been reported in temporal lobe disorders. One wonders whether Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, didn't have temporal lobe problems, given the lengthy, rambling manifesto he wrote, his proclivity toward violent behavior, and his social withdrawal. His loathing of high technology would make submitting to a spec scan out of the question for him. Some of my temporal lobe patients spend hours and hours writing. One patient used to write me 20 and 30 page letters detailing all the aspects of her life. As I learned about temporal lobe hypergraphia and had treated her with anticonvulsant medication, her letters became more coherent and were shortened to 2 or 3 pages giving the same information. Of note, many people with temporal lobe problems have the opposite of hypergraphia. They are unable to get words out of their heads and onto the page. I know a therapist who's a wonderful public speaker, but cannot get the thoughts out of his head to write his book. On his scan, there was decreased activity in both temporal lobes. On a very small daily dose of valproate, Depakote, his ideas were unlocked and he could write for hours at a time. Harriet. Memory problems have long been one of the hallmarks of temporal lobe dysfunction. Amnesia after a head injury is frequently due to damage to the inside aspect of the temporal lobes. Brain infections can also cause severe memory problems. Harriet was a very gracious 83-year-old woman who had lost her memory 15 years earlier during a bout of encephalitis. Even though she remembered events before the infection, she could remember only bits and pieces afterward. An hour after she ate, she would feel full, but couldn't remember what she had eaten. Harriet said, "I left my brain to the local medical school, hoping my problems would help someone else. But I don't think they'll do anything with my brain except give it to medical students to cut up. Plus, I want to know what the problem is and write it down. I won't remember what you tell me." Harriet's brain showed marked damage in both temporal lobes, especially on the left side, as if the virus had gone to that part of her brain and chewed it away. Alzheimer's disease, a devastating, progressive form of senile dementia, is the cause of one of the most common memory problems in the elderly. Unfortunately, it robs many people of their retirement years and can leave families physically, emotionally, and financially exhausted. SPECT is an important tool in diagnosing this disorder. Before functional studies were available, the only way to diagnose Alzheimer's was through autopsy. SPECT studies show a typical Alzheimer's pattern of decreased activity in both temporal lobes, the parietal lobes, and often in the posterior cingulate. This pattern is seen on SPECT years before the onset of symptoms, when interventions are more likely to work. Fyodor Dostoevsky was reported to have had bouts of temporal lobe seizures. He felt his affliction was a holy experience. One of his biographers, René Philippe Miller, quotes Dostoevsky as saying that his epilepsy rouses in me hitherto unsuspected emotions, gives me feelings of magnificence, abundance, and eternity. In The Idiot, Dostoevsky writes, "There was always one instant, just before the epileptic fit, when suddenly, in the midst of sadness, spiritual darkness and oppression, his brain seemed momentarily to catch fire. In an extraordinary rush, all of his vital forces were at their highest tension. The sense of life, the consciousness of self, were multiplied almost 10 times at these moments, which lasted no longer than a flash of lightning. His mind and his heart were flooded with extraordinary light. All his uneasiness, all his doubts, all his anxieties were relieved at once. They were all resolved in a lofty calm, full of serene, harmonious joy and hope, full of reason and ultimate meaning. But these moments, these flashes, were only a premonition of that final second. It was never more than a second, with which the fit began. That second was, of course, unendurable. Thinking of that moment later, when he was well again, he often said to himself that all these gleams and flashes of supreme sensation and consciousness of self, and therefore also of the highest form of being, were nothing but disease, the violation of the normal state. And if so, it was not at all the highest form of being, but on the contrary must be reckoned the lowest. Yet he came at last to an extreme paradoxical conclusion. What if it is disease, he decided at last? What does it matter that it is an abnormal intensity if the result, if the sensation, remembered and analyzed afterward in health, turns out to be the acme of harmony and beauty and gives a feeling unknown and undefined till then of completeness, of proportion, of reconciliation, and of startled, prayerful merging with the highest synthesis of life? Bryce. Lewis Carroll is reported to have had temporal lobe experiences which were described in the visual distortions of Alice in Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. 7-year-old Bryce became very upset when his mother read Alice's Adventures in Wonderland to him. He said that he felt like Alice. "I have weird things happen to me," he told her. "I see things." During the day, he saw objects change shapes, often getting smaller. He also saw green, shadowy ghosts at night. Bryce also had a lot of anxiety symptoms. Frightened that Bryce was losing his mind, a cousin had been diagnosed with a schizophrenic-like illness. His mother brought him to see me. On hearing of these symptoms, I suspected that one or both of his temporal lobes were acting up. His brain SPECT study confirmed a focal area of increased activity in his right temporal lobe. His treatment included an anti-seizure medication to stabilize his temporal lobe and psychotherapy. Within 2 weeks, Bryce's strange experiences disappeared, and over the next 6 months, his anxiety lessened. Ellen and Jack. Ellen and Jack had similar histories. Both had been somewhat reclusive, both had periods of spaciness, and both had periods of panic for no particular reason. Both had religious experiences that occupied a good deal of their lives. Ellen, age 32, was nearly paralyzed by her deep religious feelings, unable to work, and socially isolated. Jack took great interest in her periods of deep spiritual awakening, but was never able to make out what they meant. Ellen was brought to my office by her parents, who were concerned about her social isolation. Jack wanted an evaluation for his panic attacks. The couple's spec studies revealed marked increased activity in the deep aspects of their temporal lobes. The majority of their symptoms went away on anti-seizure medications. Even taking them, both remained deeply religious people, but they were no longer constantly preoccupied with their thoughts. Jim. Like Ellen and Jack, Jim was bothered by periods of spaciness and panic. He also had periods of religious thoughts in which he felt the presence of the devil and was unsure and afraid. His fear of the devil haunted him, made him reclusive, and made him seem paranoid to his family. There was an interesting difference between Jim's spec study and Ellen's and Jack's studies. Jim's study revealed abnormal activity in the left temporal lobe, not the right. In my experience, left temporal lobe problems are often associated with very negative or dark thoughts. After Jim was placed on an anti-seizure medication, the presence of the devil was gone. Temporal lobe checklist. Here is the temporal lobe checklist. Please listen to the list of behaviors and rate yourself or the person you are evaluating on each behavior listed. Use the following scale and place the appropriate number next to the item. 5 or more symptoms mark 3 or 4 indicate a high likelihood of temporal lobe problems. 0 equals never, 1 equals rarely, 2 equals occasionally, 3 equals frequently, 4 equals very frequently. 1. Short fuse or periods of extreme irritability. 2. Periods of rage with little provocation. 3. Frequent misinterpretation of comments is negative when they are not. 4. Irritability that tends to build, then explodes, then recedes. A person often feels tired after a rage. 5. Periods of spaciness or confusion. 6. Periods of panic and/or fear for no specific reason. 7. Visual or auditory changes, such as seeing shadows or hearing muffled sounds. 8. Frequent periods of deja vu, feelings of having been somewhere you have never been, or jamais vu, not recalling a familiar place or person. 9. Sensitivity or mild paranoia. 10. Headaches or abdominal pain of uncertain origin. 11. Dark thoughts, such as suicidal or homicidal thoughts. 12. Periods of forgetfulness. 13. Memory problems. 14. Reading comprehension problems. 15. Preoccupation with moral or religious ideas. Chapter 15. Boosting Memory, Learning, and Temper Control. Temporal Lobe Prescriptions. The following prescriptions are geared toward optimizing and healing the temporal lobes. They are based on what we have learned about the temporal lobes, as well as on clinical experience with my patients. Remember that the temporal lobes are involved with mood stability, understanding and processing language, memory, reading social cues, facial expression and voice intonation, rhythm and music. The following four circles, temporal lobe prescriptions, will help you optimize this part of your brain. Biological, supplements and medications, nutritional interventions, rhythmic movement, listening to classical music, humming or toning to tune up the brain, EEG biofeedback. Psychological, creating a library of wonderful experiences. Social, conflict resolution. Spiritual, singing whenever you can. Biological temporal lobe prescriptions. Biological. Consider temporal lobe supplements or medications from the Amen Clinics method algorithm. At Amen Clinics, we use the following algorithm when we see abnormal, lower high, temporal lobe activity plus symptom clusters of mood instability, anxiety, irritability, and memory and learning challenges. Supplements for lower high temporal lobe activity plus mood instability, anxiety, or irritability. At Amen Clinics, we have found GABA, magnesium, theanine, and taurine helpful for these issues. Medications for lower high temporal lobe activity plus mood instability, anxiety, or irritability. We specifically use gabapentin, Neurontin, for anxiety and irritability, and lamotrigine, Lamictal, and valproate, Depakote, for mood instability and resistant depression. Supplements for low temporal lobe activity plus memory or learning challenges. We often use a combination of ginkgo biloba, vinpocetine, huperzine A, acetyl-L-carnitine, alpha-lipoic acid, phosphatidylserine, B vitamins, including B6, B12, methyl tetrahydrofolate, and omega-3 fatty acids. Medications for low temporal lobe activity plus memory or learning challenges. We use medications that boost the learning neurotransmitter acetylcholine, such as donepezil, Aricept, or those that modulate the neurotransmitter glutamate, which also helps with learning, with memantine, Namenda. Sometimes, stimulant medications can help boost temporal lobe activity, but it is important to use them carefully as they can also increase